As to the introductory comments, the only thing I should say besides that they are exaggerated is that they have not assessed correctly the importance of the parrot. And you can see how beautiful he is, but he is also very intelligent. All right. With regard to the criminology of firearms, we begin with a common myth. The idea that nations that allow firearms ownership and have widespread firearms ownership have higher murder rates than highly restrictive nations. The evidence is overwhelmingly to the contrary of this, but you will never convince a lot of people of it. As an example of the evidence, perhaps the foremost example, it wasn't until after World War II that we had the beginning of good figures on American murder rates and on the ownership of firearms. In 1946, the United States had an estimated something like 47.5 million handguns, or firearms of all types. Today, we have an estimated 319 million firearms of all kinds. How much has that contributed to homicide in the United States, this six-fold increase in firearms? Well, we are now, and have for the past several years, been substantially less murderous, or had a substantially less murder rate, lower murder rate, than we had in 1946. The various similar facts are available from Europe, insofar as possible, to evaluate this. I'm getting ahead of myself. The belief that more guns means more murder was instilled in the minds of liberals, or most liberals. I should indicate I myself am a liberal, but fortunately not so deluded as most of them are. Because of a false coincidence. Well, my answer, I couldn't say it's a coincidence. There's some cause and effect relationship. In the 1960s, crime, particularly violent crime, became a major issue, and gun ownership substantially flourished. And people of a somewhat credulous mindset jumped to the conclusion that, well, more guns are being purchased and violent crime is getting greater, therefore the purchase of more guns produces more violent crime. Now, had the Soviet Union not been fudging its crime statistics, it would have been evident that that was untrue. In the 1960s, both the United States, where everyone every law-abiding adult is allowed to want to own a gun. And Russia, where they are severely circumscribed, in both nations, crime, or rather, murder, doubled. In fact, in the Soviet Union, the annual murder rate has always been worse than it is in the United States. As of the decade 2000-2010, the Soviet Union had a murder rate four times greater than that of the United States. Very rarely were those murders done with handguns or other guns, but it turns out, as anybody with common sense would have known, that you don't need a gun to commit a murder, particularly if your victim doesn't have access to a gun. Data from other nations also scotches the idea that the more guns, the more murder. The second highest rate of gun ownership in Europe is in Norway. Norway has the lowest murder rate of any European nation. The highest gun ownership is in Finland. Finland has 14 times as many guns as Estonia, which used to be a Soviet Union, a part of the Soviet Union, it's now, I believe, independent. Yet Estonia, with 1/14 as many guns, has a murder rate seven times higher than Finland. And I could go through this crap for a whole bunch of other European nations, and if you want to ask me at the end, I shall happily do so, but I can summarize it this way. We have data, we have murder rate data and gun ownership data for 16 European nations. Nine of them are very restrictive of guns and have very low gun ownership. Seven of them are not restrictive and have much higher gun ownership. The nine highly restrictive nations have three times the homicide rate of the seven nations as an average. Now, all of this comes from an article I published with a Canadian criminologist in the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy when the hell was that article? I think it's 2008. Well, I write all this crap and then they publish it, and it takes years to get published, and so everything's way behind the times when it comes out. In Europe, as in the United States, there is a coincidence that should provoke thought. The more restrictive the gun laws, the higher the nation's homicide rate. Now, that does not mean, as many pro-gun people would claim, that people having the tools of self-defense, the result is that criminals are afraid and they don't engage in violent crime. There is certainly some important some importance to such a correlation, but so far as I know, certainly as far as we could find, there's nothing in Europe where anyone has ever been able to show that nations that had higher gun ownership had large numbers of self-defense instances. Our conclusion was simply that if certain nations, for various reasons, have higher murder rates and galloping murder rates, and they very often turn to banning guns as the way that they're going to prevent that, and banning guns has nothing to do with it, and if anything, it's harmful. Therefore, the result is that nations with severe anti-gun laws have much higher murder rates, and that's not a correlation based on lack of self-defense ability. It's a correlation based on having those nations having adopted a futile and self-defeating mechanism of reducing violence. So it turns out, it looks like, superficially it looks like, the more guns you have, the less crime you have, and the fewer guns you have, the more violence you have. And I, you know, I'm willing to accept the notion that that might be true in some minor sense, but it's certainly not true that because a nation bans guns, it has three times the murder rate of some other nation that allows guns. Now, studies that address these kinds of questions only began, the earliest would have been in the very late 19th century. So they were not available to the founding fathers. But the founding fathers had two centuries of experience with a society in which everyone was required to own a gun. In colonial society, every man and woman, including criminals for that matter, but every man and woman was required to own a gun. And the conclusion, which as one of the founding fathers commented, it's, I think I have a quote here somewhere, I'll find it. Well, it's easy enough for you.
We're trying to hide the fact that you say things like that.
I'm trying to hide the fact that I'm goddamn blind. Okay. Screw the quote, I can't remember it. Basically, the quote is something like, long experience has proven that a totally armed populace is harmless, or to have a totally armed populace is harmless. As a result, it was integral to the founding fathers. They all owned guns. They all believed that, as Thomas Paine put it, arms like laws discourage and keep the invader and the plunderer in awe and preserve order in the world. And as far, I mean, let's put it this way. If there is a founder who felt something different, as Bill Van Alstyne has commented, it is the best kept secret of the 18th century, because none of, no such comment has been found from any founding fathers. All right. Last of all, on the subject of armed self-defense, the best available evidence is that roughly 3 million instances occur each year in which armed civilians thwart crime. And again, welcome in the question period to ask me more about that. And in fact, you're welcome, anybody who's writing a law review article and wants help, Alice can give you my email address, and I'm happy to correspond with people about it. Now, in the middle of the night last night, I woke up and I thought of 4 new law review articles that I hadn't previously mentioned. The ones I previously mentioned, as Alice says, they're, you know, you somewhere in that big book. One is just European gun laws. The notion that Europe has restrictive gun laws is just flat out false. They have, the United States has restrictions, Europe has restrictions. They are different in nature. For instance, in Austria, you need a permit to own any kind of handgun. What the anti-gun people don't mention is that under Austrian law, you have a legal right, written into the law, a legal right to a permit. And I could go through various other nations with the same kind of things. An article on European gun laws written by somebody who speaks some European language well enough to read the stuff would be very useful. A second issue, which is quite striking, is the different standards that exist. Suppose a woman is attacked by a rapist and she pulls out a gun and he backs away, but she's pissed and she shoots him. In the United States, that's manslaughter. In various European nations, including Italy, Germany, France, and I believe Belgium, that's a legal defense. It's called outrage. And a jury, if it believes that this woman was outraged at being attacked, is supposed to acquit her. That is certainly worth an article. Although, again, you have to have enough knowledge of the European nations involved to be able to research that stuff, which I certainly don't have. A subject of which I would think would be of great interest is Israeli gun laws. Israel is a socialist society. Socialism provides, or is supposed to provide, people with what they need. What do they need? Well, one of the things they need are guns. Relatively few Israelis have gun permits. Why? Because I get this from an Israeli judge who, having been a police officer, never owned a gun. And the explanation was simple. Why should he spend money getting a gun when all he had to do is go to a police station and draw one out, something which any Israeli civilian can do. In fact, I was astounded when I first met this guy, because he wanted to know why were Americans so interested in owning guns. And I thought, Jesus Christ, and it's really talking like that? And then he continued, if you need to defend yourself, why don't you just go down to a police station and draw out an Uzi? That's the way gun laws work in Israel, a socialist society. All right. If anybody has questions, I'm happy to try to answer. Yes.
Has anyone published a paper doing an interrupted time series analysis of crime rates and murder rates in European countries where the interruption point is the development of a new law, passage of a restricted gun law? Should I say that a little louder?
No. You're absolutely right. I'm deaf as a fucking pope, but I did hear your question. There are a number of studies of English gun law but I don't know that any of them had interrupted time series or any other sophisticated mathematical basics.
I know Greenwood's book makes the claim that the Shotguns Act of 1967 produced was the only one of their laws that actually had an effect on crime rates, and it seems to have actually made them go up. But I was just curious to know if anyone had, it seems like this would be an obvious opportunity for someone with a statistical bent would be to take a number of the European countries that have adopted restrictive gun laws and see if they can demonstrate any effect on violent crime rates as a result of passage of each of those laws.
There is research that's been done on rates of home invasion after. Isn't there a comparative rate of home invasion for burglaries versus nighttime versus when the homeowner is absent after gun laws have passed?
In which countries?
I think in Australia and England, I think.
Okay, it would perhaps be a worthwhile thing to see if you're taking a larger sample of countries to go ahead and do such a comparison. It simply because of the fact that no one's probably done it yet.
If you look at Dave Koppel's brief, one of Dave Koppel's briefs is the Heller case. There is some effort by Dave to do a comparison between the U.S. burglary rate and the English burglary rate. It's not precisely the methodology you talked about.
Right.
It's the starting point.
Okay.
Is Dave
Koppel
here?
Yeah, he'll be here. We were drinking with him last night.
I'm sorry?
We were drinking with him. Well, they were drinking.
No, they were
drinking. I don't agree. Yeah, he's here.
Well, Dave Koppel has some information on this, I know. But I don't know what his information is, and I don't know how strong it is. All right, any other questions? Well...
Shall we turn it over to Hardy now? And now Hardy's going to work you.
Well,
he's the
okay.
Gentle taskmaster. Hardy is the beat up guy.
Well, I think Don's covered it pretty well, as has the other speakers, as far as potential topics. And besides, I don't know anything about statistics at all other than that I can read things. There is an interesting data with it. Oh, I'll swing around here. There's some interesting data within the United States of, was it Bordua? Bordua published the studies on the Illinois counties.
Okay, that is Bordua and Lazat.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Lazat has done. Bordua may have done some later stuff. I don't think Allen has done anything since he graduated from under Bordua's thumb.
Yeah, what he did was there are, I forget, 200 counties in Illinois, some ungodly number. I come from Arizona, where we're content with like a dozen. So he took each one of those, and what are the number of people with firearm owner identification cards in it, indicating at least legal gun ownership? And what are the, what was the homicide rate, I think? Plotted out, and he said, when you took the raw data, you had a perfect correlation. The more firearm owner, the more firearm owner identification cards, the lower the homicide rate. He said it was so perfect that no statistician would accept it. Human beings are not that predictable. Then when they compensate for poverty rates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, what they got was a flat line. There are, I guess, basically no correlation at all, absolutely zero. Later on, Gary Kleck, Florida State University, did his studies of self-defense and the number of incidents and came up with some incredible numbers based on a very comprehensive survey. And he told me that one of his theories is that the self-defense rate offsets the homicide rate, thus explaining that there is no correlation between gun ownership and homicide at all. He said if gun ownership depressed the homicide rate or increased the homicide rate, you would see some correlation one way or the other, but instead you get no correlation at all. His theory, granted theory, was that one offsets the other and there's a net result of zero.
Which is also Carl Moody's conclusion.
I would also make the point that the things that determine murder rates and violent crime rates tend to be primarily cultural. And it's very often the case that there are correlations between gun ownership and the culture of a society, which may in fact be the single biggest factor that controls that. That's the advantage that interrupted time series approaches have, is that they do provide an opportunity to see did the law actually change something, or because if you're only looking at a correlation for any given year, it's very hard to distinguish what is the cultural component from what is the effect of the law. The interrupted time series enables you to see what effect did a law change have on the behavior of a population. Assuming no other cultural changes, yes. But if you have something that takes place in a specific year, there's a wonderful opportunity to make a distinction between what changed in the law and what changed in the society.